Morning. This is the DNSSEC workshop, and we'll start in just a few minutes. So if you want to grab a seat, and I don't want to be too close to this, grab a seat, and then we'll get started very shortly. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. And I'm Julie Headland. I'm with ICANN staff, and I'm very happy to welcome you to the DNSSEC workshop here in Beijing, China. This workshop occurs at every ICANN meeting, and we've been doing them for a long time. And we have a very substantive program today. You should have a program at your seat. You should also have a ticket to lunch and a sheet where you can record your answers to the very fun quiz we have that will come up right before lunch. And if you look at your program, you might notice that there are some colors. And there's green and blue and gray. And those colors are to help you decide which parts of the workshop you want to stay for, depending on just how deep into DNSSEC you want to get. Now, of course, we'd be happy if you want to stay for the whole thing. But if you want just sort of at the beginner level, then you can stay for the green. And if you're feeling up to moving on to the intermediate level, then you can move in, stay on for the blue. And then if you're feeling expert, you can stay for the gray-coded parts and get really deep into DNSSEC. And just to remind you, this is a workshop organized by the Security, Stability, and Advisory Committee, Security and Stability Advisory Committee of ICANN, and also with the DNSSEC Deployment Initiative. And I have here with me today to help kick off the workshop Dr. Steve Crocker. Dr. Crocker is a co-chair of the DNSSEC Deployment Initiative, along with Russ Mundy here. Hi. And as you may also know, Dr. Crocker is CEO and co-founder of Shinkuro. It's a startup company focused on sharing of information across the internet. And he's also chairman of the board of ICANN. So please join me in welcoming Steve. And then also I would like to mention we have two other people in our on our panel today. And this is the panel on the introduction and DNSSEC deployment around the world. We have Vim Degazelle from Center and Ed Lewis from Newstar. And at this point, I'd like to turn things over to Steve.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Julie. This session is one of the high points of the whole week for me. Some time ago when we started these up, I was most of my activity was focused on SSAC, and now I've gotten into the unenviable position, despite what it might look like, of having lots of herding cats kind of duties with the board and ceremonial stuff and so forth. And what it's done is it's aligned me perfectly with the color scheme here. I get to stay through the through this and the next panel, which are green, and then I have to leave. So that makes me, at least observationally, a novice, which is probably closer to the truth these days than anything else. I've made a habit of trying to open these meetings with a little introduction and thank yous and maps of the world. So first of all, we've had the benefit of a really stellar program committee. A lot of work goes into the preparation of this session. Weekly calls, calls for participation, a lot of coordination. And how many of us are here? There's Dan York, Jacques, and and Russ, of course, and myself, and Julie. Julie actually makes everything happen. It's a very good group. We a few years ago started to bring in more people, and there's Andre. Did I miss you? The other Andre. One Andre is as good. No, sorry, bad joke. It's been very helpful in refreshing and bringing in new ideas. Coming out of that process was the addition of the beginner session on Mondays, and it's sort of a sadness in my life that I have yet to be able to attend a single one. How was it? How many of you went to the beginner session? Yeah. Was it lively? Was it good? Yeah. Good. And then a implementers bash. When was that? Last night or the night before?
Monday night.
And how many of you went to that?
We had about 25-30 people there.
Yeah, it seemed to be growing, I could tell from the list. And how much alcohol was... Never mind. Good. So let me thank the program committee. You deserve a lot of credit, a lot of recognition. Next slide. So this is our program. You all have it printed out here, and Julie's explained the color code. Next slide. Okay. Oh, but back up one. The other thing is that you may have heard there's no such thing as a free lunch. No, the sponsor slide.
Yes.
Yeah, so, right. So ICANN is loaded with so much money that you'd think that everything is supported, but in fact, there's a certain line drawn, and they don't supply the lunch. So we've had for quite some time the benefit of very, very good sponsorship that goes primarily to paying for the free lunch that you get. And I thank the sponsors. It's been very comfortable, positive relationship. Next slide. Yeah, yeah. It's a little high for a desk, but yeah. So I've made a habit of trying to project maps. This map is a new one, which we're experimenting with. It shows the whole world in the color code. I'll explain in a second, and is in principle. Has high enough fidelity that you can zoom in on it. I don't know. Do we have the ability? This is all first try. And we're going to post this online in various places, which I'll get to in just a second. So just for grins, pick some dense place and zero in. West Africa or the Southeast Asia or something, or Europe even. Right. So now you can see some fidelity that we weren't able to do in previous maps. Okay, so what's the color scheme? The color scheme is intended to show different stages of deployment. The experimental in kind of a burnt orange is evidence. We assign that code whenever there's evidence that the CCTLD has begun development or experimentation with the technology. They may not have yet announced that they are going forward with DNSSEC. They may not have anything operational, but it's clear an indication that they're beginning to invest resources and climb up the learning curve. The next state, yellow, is when they've made a formal announcement that they intend to deploy DNSSEC, not necessarily giving any date and not necessarily being operational, but it's a big step for a CCTLD operator to make that commitment formally. In a public way. And then we have three states of degrees of operation. The blue is when the zone is signed and it's visible that it is, but not necessarily in operation. The light green is when it's signed and the DS record has made it into the root. And so now if you look at the root zone, you'll see a DS record and you can tie all that together. And the dark green is when it's fully operational, which means that it's accepting delegations from its subordinate children zones. Only the partial and DS in the root states are observable by external testing. All the other has to be reported and dependent upon the reports from the people who are doing it. And so we maintain a database that has this information, also has both backward and forward dates so that we can tell when those things happen, when they're expected to happen, if they're reported. We keep track of whether the report came from the people running the CCTLD or a secondary party, so we have a kind of estimate of the reliability of the information, and we try to improve all that. At the end of the day, we should have a historical record of when things actually happened, and we're gradually improving it. And then we try to reconcile this with the mechanical surveys that we take and that other people take. Next slide. Okay, so this is our regular presentation. Next slide. And you've seen now the color codes here. This is not exactly the same as on the other. I'll have to go fix that up next time. Apologies. Thank you. You're going to let me do this. This is the counts that we had of top-level domains, and this includes the GTLDs, the CCTLDs, two regional ones that are treated contractually like CCTLDs but don't correspond to specific countries. One is .eu and the other is .su, where SU is the previous Soviet Union, and it's distinguished from .ru, which is for Russia. And then there's 11 IDN test domains, and we've divided them up in the other dimension of IDNs versus non-IDNs, if you will, which I've called classic. Ignore it. And the numbers in parentheses are the totals in that category, and the numbers outside of the parentheses are the numbers that have either that have the DS in the root and are either in that state or have progressed further and become operational. So this is as of 6 months ago. To focus quickly, there were 323 total entries in the root, 94 of them signed. That does not include the root, which some people count as a separate entry, and we just don't, and does include the 11 test, which some people don't. So if you're trying to match these numbers up against other kind of surveys, we've tried to break it down finely enough so you can put the pieces together any way that you want. Of the CCTLDs, this is 67 out of 283, and of the GTLDs, this is 14 out of 27, and here's the figures for today, basically, a few days ago, and I'll just flip back and forth in case you want to see. So there's 323 total, 324 now, one new one. There's 94 of those that were signed 6 months ago, 101 that are signed now. Not only signed, but have DS in the root, and so those are the totals. All this information is posted, I guess. Right? These slides are posted. Yep. Good. And so here's the graphical version. This is 2012. So this is 2 years ago, and I'll just go through in a kind of quasi animated fashion. We can take the cuts anywhere we want in terms of time. We took for this presentation just a year at a time, so there'd just be three. This is 2012, this is 2013, and this is 2014. I'll just bounce back and forth here so you can see it. And then we've also done regional ones. So this is the North America version, and here is the Latin American Caribbean version, 3 years. Here's Europe, and here's Africa. And here's the Asia-Pacific region. So that's the sum total of all of that. I'm going to touch on one more topic, but I'll pause for a minute. Any questions about these statistics or presentation issues? It's interesting, too. At least we find it interesting to keep track of these. There's also progress, of course, on the generic top-level domain space, but we don't have a nice way to map all those and show that except for the growth statistics. When the new generics are start coming online, there's a requirement, of course, for all of them to be signed, so the numbers will start to shift as part of that. Okay, thank you. Let's move to the other thing, and then I will stop blathering.
I do have one question.
Oh, the Adobe Connect thing?
Just hold on for a second. We have to get the Adobe Connect room up, which stopped closed momentarily, or the folks who are joining us remotely won't be able to see what we're doing. Hold on for a second.
Yep. Okay. Over the past several months, that's part of the work that we do on my day job, as it were. We've been doing some work looking at the readiness of recursive resolvers to support DNSSEC, and evolved a grading system, if you will, although the word grade, it tends to annoy the ISPs who are sort of the subject of this. The goal is to examine the recursive resolvers that are principally at ISPs and assess what state of support they provide for DNSSEC. The top level is that they actually carry out the validation, if you ask them to, and will give you back an answer that says whether or not the domain name that you're looking for was in fact signed all the way up and or not. A next level down is whether or not they support the ability for the end system to retrieve the records necessary to do their own validation. That might seem very straightforward, but in fact there are plenty of resolvers that have not yet been upgraded to provide the necessary capability to do that. In what way would they be insufficient? They might be limited in terms of the type of record that they're willing to return. They might be limited in the length, the size of the records. They might not support the eDNS zero option, for example. And we found some interesting rough edges, which I'll get into in just a second. So we did a couple of surveys, one of which we need to go back and check the results on and refine, so I'm not going to report on that. But one of them, we used a system provided by a company called SAM Knows that the Federal Communications, U.S. Federal Communications Commission has under contract. And they've placed machines for other reasons, for bandwidth survey, in end user environments, and they can download to those tests to be run. And so, with a great deal of cooperation, we supplied the tests. They took those, implemented them, put them into their resolvers, ran those tests, and have reported the results back. So let me now go to the next slide. So these measurements, as I said, we kind of categorize the results into basically three levels, whether or not it's what we call a validator, that it checks the signatures when requested to do so. Next level down is that it has the capability of providing all the information necessary for the client to do its own validation. So we call that a DNSSEC aware resolver. And a broad category of other. Next slide. We found that in early experimentation that there were multiple reasons for things to be not quite perfect. One of them I alluded to before, or mentioned before, is that the limitations on packet size. There are basically two ways to deal with large packets. One is the EDNS zero option, and also the packet maximum transport unit in the whole path has to be big enough to encompass the size packet necessary. And the other is to shift to TCP. Either way will give you a positive answer. If you don't have either of them, then you're in trouble. We found, to our surprise, that some resolvers did not support the DNAME record, which is just a violation of the official protocol, but reflects the state of software at a certain point being fielded, and then the introduction of the DNAME record not being supported. We also found, also surprising, that DNSSEC would be supported, but only NSEC, but not NSEC 3 records were supported. And that, too, seems to be a kind of moment in time because the NSEC 3 definition came in a little later. There's supposed to also be general support for new record types irrespective of whether or not you've ever seen them before, and we found that some resolvers didn't. So for those reasons, or combinations of those reasons, we'd have to downgrade a resolver. But we didn't want to just some experience involved here. We didn't want to just throw it in into the generally incomplete and inadequate broad other case. We would wanted to recognize that the basic implementation was intended, seemed to be intended. It's hard to we didn't go ask them, but we read the situation as they intended to provide either the validation level support or the DNSSEC aware level support, and then just failed in one of these ways. Next slide. So we ran the measurements, and here's the results. The green, light and dark, which comprises half, are the ones that we judge to be DNSSEC aware. The light green ones, which is a third of the of that half, are deficient in some way or another. So we call those sort of partial DNSSEC aware. But two-thirds of those, which is a full third of the total, were fully DNSSEC aware. The dark and light blue, which comprise about a sixth of all the validators, resolvers, were validators, and of those, interestingly, the same fraction, two-thirds of those were complete full implementations, and a third failed in one fashion or another. And then the remainder, which was somewhat more than a quarter, were broken or fell into some other odd categories. Next slide. So these were our findings, that many resolvers DNSSEC aware. That's good news. Some resolvers check signatures, and in both cases there were some limitations, and as I showed, about a third of each category had some limitations. Next slide. That's it. So that's the quick version. There's lots more data, obviously, behind all that, and we have another survey, which is interesting, that gets at the same data from a different perspective, and we need to refine that, so we'll try to report that next time. Thank you. Any questions? Dan?
Yeah.
Dan York, a question was, so where are you going with this research around the resolvers, and how can people here help?
A very good question. Excellent question. Well, one of the things that's come out of this is a little tool. I'm embarrassed because I should have covered all that. We have a little tool that anybody can download, and it will do this sort of test from your own perspective on the resolvers that you are accessing and report back to you. To you, and also ask if you're willing to have us capture that data, and we can build a survey. We're also working very closely, Dan, with you with the DNSSEC deployment, with the deploy 360 program, with the DNSSEC the deployment portion of that, and trying to mount both the maps and the tools and these records in cooperation with the Internet Society, generally build up an awareness of what the issues are. Also provide an ability to focus on individual resolvers and provide some constructive spotlight shining, and hopefully that will have a positive effect on the implementations over time. Thank you. There was another question a few rows back there, sir. Nope. Okay. Thank you all. We certainly remain open for questions. Don't feel free to send mail and holler. Vim.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, all of you. I do my best to stick to the 5-minute timeline. I think you can go to the quickly to the second or third slide already. I'm Wim de Gisele, working for Center. I'm based Belgium, based in Brussels. You can go to the next slide. I think more important, interesting than talking about myself is just explain you for those of you who doesn't know Center, what Center is. Center is basically the European CCTLD organization. We were founded by CCTLD registries. And at this moment, we have 51 full members. It is important to know full members, according to our statutes, are only CCTLD registries. We also have some associate members, which are either CCTLDs from outside the European region or some GTLDs that are also associate members. If you see, 51 full members, that's, to be clear, a lot larger than the 27 European Union countries. All our members together are roughly, according to our latest count, represent 75% of CCTLD domain names around the world. Next slide, please. Like I said, Center is basically our first task is bring the CCTLDs together. We do that in different workshops. We have, people coming together on R&D, admin, marketing, security, legal, and technical issues. So it's important to understand that we are more than a service or a lobby or whatever organization. We're the CCTLDs founded our organization to work together. Next slide. You can already go further. This is a table. It's maybe a little bit too small print, but it comes from a survey which we did amongst our members at the end of last year, December 2012. Which simply asked, at what moment did you launch or are you planning to launch DNSSEC? At that point, you can see that this year is quite important for the CCTLD's member of Center, because there are a group of 15 participants to the survey that answered, okay, by the end of 2013, we will have DNSSEC operational and ready. Which also means that if you look back from 2007 to 2013, there will be a large majority of our members that have DNSSEC. Next slide, please. Linked to this, in the same survey, we also asked, okay, but how many names, actually how many DNSSEC signed names do you have now? Which goes from, in the survey, 4 till 1.3 million, 360,000 million. I think you all probably in previous workshops heard about the example from .sc, Czech Republic, or .nl. The next slide. This is the result of data we gathered on one moment in time that we say, okay, we organize a survey or we collect the data. We started thinking, okay, it would be nice to follow a little bit more accurate and a little bit more in real time what's happening. The next slide or next one. The question was, how can we do that? A couple of years ago, we started within Center to collect in a more or less automated way the domain name counts. We do this by asking our members to publish in XML format the most recent, well, or the daily counts on of domain names. We very recently updated that tool. You can go to the next to also include DNSSEC counts. It is, well, you see, this is what is the output of the tool. At this moment, it's only available on our member site, and there is no information yet, because I say very recently, I think the upgrade of the tool was ready with the usual weeks or months of delay, so it was only ready 2 or 3 weeks ago. Next slide, please. So what are now our plans? I think it is important to mention this is a non-commercial initiative. It is just the center members, the CCTLDs, that say, okay, we collect the information about ourselves. So we, as within center, we will, the next couple of weeks and months, push to our members, saying, okay, those that are already in the tool, please update your XML file that now we can also start to collect DNSSEC counts. In a next step or a next wave, we will contact our sister organizations in the other parts of the world, AFTLD for Africa, APTLD for Asia Pacific, and LECTLD for Latin America and the Caribbean, to say, okay, also your members, CCTLDs, if they are willing to share the information, they can make use of the tool. And then from the moment, of course, we have enough well, participants in the tool, we will discuss, or we have already some plans, but then definitely discuss how we can make this information publicly available, either by reporting or put it on our website. So that was my short presentations. Comments are welcome. I really wanted to announce it here that we are working on it, because maybe some of you have similar initiatives and say, okay, it would be good to work together, or have ideas on how we can use it. So, questions?
Anyone? I guess I'll be the mic guy. Well, it's Daniel. I'll just say, Vim, this is awesome that you're collecting this kind of information, because one of the comments that we've had at past workshops has been that we don't have great measurements around what are the true numbers of DNSSEC deployed or assigned domains. We have some of them coming out of the stuff that the PowerDNS folks and .nl folks have been working on for that area, but not in a forum. So it's excellent. Any comments or questions? How many people here are from CCTLDs? How many of you would join in Vim's effort to collect DNSSEC records? Okay. Are you getting names?
Okay. You have my email address and...
Can we... we need a... do you have a pad, Julie? We can get their names and sign them up right here.
I took a picture.
Okay, yeah. Take a picture. Everybody... Any else? Comments?
Thanks. All right, Ed, I think it's your turn.
My turn. My name is Ed Lewis. I work for Neustar. I've worked on DNSSEC for quite a long time. I've been to Beijing quite a few times. This is the first time I've had a chance to talk about DNSSEC, which I find kind of unusual. Usually I go places to speak about DNSSEC for the first time. I've been doing a study. You can go to the next slide. I started to do a little study about a year ago to a year and a half ago to see how DNSSEC was being deployed at the TLDs, to see what do the smart people do about DNSSEC, how do they set up their key timing and so on. And one of the outcomes was that I started counting the deployment of DNSSEC across around the world. So what I've been counting is I'm looking at the root zone plus the TLDs out there, 306 of them I count. There are 317 for real, but 11 of them are test domains. And because they're test domains, they're not operational, I'm not that interested in where they are and how they're doing their work. As these slides are always made, there's always one more zone that appears right after you've made your slides, so that keeps changing these numbers a little bit. But I will say that the numbers that I come up with and the number that Steve come up with, we actually talk between meetings to make sure we have accounts that line up one way or the other. Why am I presenting this? This is a good way to see where DNSSEC is possible in the sense that you can build secure chains. What's interesting about this is I look at the zones that have keys and signatures and say these are TLDs that are doing the work to generate the DNSSEC data. I also look at what zones have actually bothered to put the DS record in the root so that the secure chain can be built. And I have those two numbers separate. For the major categories, I have percentage of adoption. And then I decided to look a little bit deeper in this than just giving you raw numbers. It's to try to look at what makes a ccTLD decide to do DNSSEC or not, see if there are any other characteristics, and maybe where are ccTLDs that may want more help, where are the opportunities to push it in other areas. So next slide. So looking over quarterly for the past year and a half, almost 2 years now, we're at about one-third of all the TLDs are signed. Recently, there's been a few additions, but that still hasn't changed the percentage. When you have 300 of them, it takes three of them to go up by 1%. It hasn't gone that far yet. The yellow line, the DS records, those two lines should be as close as possible, and they have been deviating a little bit kind of in the negative way, but that's not a major concern. They're catching up all over time. The next slide. So to look at by category, there are many ways to split up zones. There are ccTLDs that we understand as the .cn, .no, .us, and so on. ccTLDs, that's the majority of delegations currently in the root zone. That's about 250, I think, out of 320 or so, or of that kind. So when you look at this number here, the red bar, which shows all of the zones that are signed, which is 32%, ccTLDs are pretty much the same number because they're the largest part of the pie. The non-ccTLD ones stick out being really well signed. They're almost 60%, 55-60% in there. Those refer to all the .com, .biz, .info, .org, .net, .arpa is in there, and anything that's basically has a relationship pretty much with ICANN. I think you could say that for all of these. IDN ccTLDs are the ccTLDs that have the non-Western script, non-Latin script names, the .xn dash dash and so on. And they trail in being signed because they generally are just newer. In some cases, they're considered to be experimental and they're signed early. In some cases, they seem to be treated more slowly because they're not the prime interest of that area. Next slide. So the other thing I found interesting is I attend a lot of meetings. In fact, I've been to a lot of center meetings, and I noticed this. I've seen the dynamics happening within center and around DNSSEC for the past couple of years. And so I figured it would be interesting to look at what are the rates of adoption by membership in different organizations. And these numbers here, there's some overlaps. But if you take all of the full members, I think it's full members of Center I have here, nearly 60% of Center members have signed the zones they have inside of there. There's a lot of energy there to promote that, DNSSEC and other technologies in that area. APTLD is at 44%. LACTLD is about 40% and so on. CCNSO then comes in at about 35%, and all these exceed the raw of 32% across the board. On the other side, non-members is lagging, and that kind of I find that interesting. AFTLD is at the end of there, but the non-members definitely lag. Tells me that it's probably something to do with, you know, when you're members of organizations, you probably will start pushing more technologies into your operations. Next slide. So some speculation from these numbers. I know GTLD category is largely influenced by ICANN. ICANN is promoting DNSSEC, and it just kind of says that outside influences tends to have a lot of importance in getting DNSSEC rolled out in some places. Membership and trade organizations really do help. Peer pressure, I've seen peer pressure actually happen with one ccTLD once said, we're never going to do it. A year later, they were signing when they realized everyone around them was signing too. It wasn't that hard to do. When I was preparing the slides, I had one of my friends at Center, not WIM, somebody else, wanted me to make sure I said it pays to be a member of Center. That's my plug to them. And for in general, it pays to be a member anywhere. You tend to get help in promoting DNSSEC. Next slide. So now in terms of adoption elsewhere, this is only a TLD study. This is not a general adoption study out there. A few TLDs have noticeable adoption. Some have had negligible adoption. In the unsigned TLDs, we can't measure. We have no way of knowing. I only know pretty much as anecdotal evidence at this level, and I think the work that Wim was talking about is actually going to help us get down to the next level here, which is what some people really want to see. What's the adoption rates throughout what we call second-level domains or the real enterprises out there that need to get signed? So any questions?
Okay, my name is Stefano Trumpi, member of the SAC, but mainly GAC member from Italy. I would like to know if you have some measurements or some idea if in the countries where the country code is not activated, if the fact that the zone is not signed may be an incentive to use GTLDs like .com or others because they are signed. So if there is in the business model and the, in the evolution of the country or country codes in particular, but generally speaking also in GTLDs, if this is an incentive to increase the number of registrants.
I know there's probably no real way to measure that, to really understand the motivation country to country, because a lot of times most everything done in terms of registering a name is there's some economics involved, and there may be pricing. Whether you go for a local name or for a GTLD name. I'm not sure yet that the registries have ever tried to make the presence of DNSSEC be a selling point. I can't say that. I don't know of that being ever, say, come to us because of this. And even in that case, it's going to come down to what happens in the registrars for most of these cases. In the GTLD world, the registrars are the front-facing. And I'm not that familiar with the registrars and how they market domain names. Maybe somebody else does. And they'll, I don't even know if they actually use that in their pitches or not, honestly.
Could you just identify yourself, too, for the mic?
This is Joe Abley from ICANN. I was these are all good statistics. I was wondering whether we could knit the future work in trying to map these things, not just in what's signed, but in terms of quality and how well they're signed. We've seen, with TLDs are not a good example, because most TLDs are run very professionally, and you know what small operational errors they have been well disclosed, and we learn from our mistakes, and it's all good. It's all a good learning exercise. But particularly in TLDs where there's been a financial incentive to promote DNSSEC, so there's lower prices per domain and things like that, it would be interesting to know whether the rate of validation errors as tracked by people like Comcast during the ongoing discussion for negative trust anchors and things like that, whether those kinds of errors appeared with different frequency depending on the kinds of deployments you see at the second level.
Yeah.
So do some of these incentives to promote DNSSEC for reasons other than just a desire for security that DNSSEC gives, do those have any sort of side effects in terms of the stability of the namespace for validators?
Yeah, I think the place where the answer would lie and where the pain is felt is going to be in the validating community. So people like large cable providers that have gone with DNSSEC, like Comcast has thrown around, and Google is doing this now, they would know far better than, from my position right now, I mostly work with TLDs and from that end of the DNSSEC. It's hard for me to, I don't even have access to those, accurate way to get those, but it would, recursive servers that are validating and are having these problems, they're going to be the evidence of what's going out there. And plus, they're the ones that generally bear the cost of a failed validation. You know, when a keyword goes bad and, you know, someone thinks that the ISP has cut off a certain site from the internet, the ISP gets blamed. We've seen that. So I think it's interesting for them to know what's out there. And that would be one place for the pressure to come in to clean up some of the acts. The next question, though, is is there responsibility of the TLD on its registrations? You know, what's the relationship there? Can a TLD enforce correct DNSSEC on its registrants? And that's going to be different by TLD from place to place.
Well, my name is Alvaro Suarez, IDN. Just as a reaction to Joe, we measure that. I'll have some numbers in the next presentation.
All right, we move smoothly to the next panel. How far behind? Oh, my, we're way behind, yeah. Stefano, you're part of this. Come on up. And Debbie, I'm going in backwards order. And Kath. And Dr. Alakbar Jabbar. And if I've mispronounced, but I don't see you. Not here. Well, then we'll make up some time. All right. So this session is on the legislative, regulative, and persuasive approaches to encouraging DNSSEC deployment. A series of presentations from all over the world here. We were going to start in Lebanon, but we're going to skip Lebanon and go directly to the UK. And so Kath Golding, policy DNSSEC debate in the UK. There's a debate.
Hi, thanks, Steve. And thank you for inviting me here, because I'm a relative newcomer to ICANN. So first of all, a bit of background. Next slide, please.
Hold on for a second. Our Adobe Connect room went and dropped out again. I don't know why, but I do have to get it back up or the folks remotely won't know what we're doing.
Sorry about that. It's okay. Should we dance or something?
Or maybe orange blossoms special. I could do that.
Next slide, please. So a bit of background. Nominet, the UK TLD, was an early adopter of DNSSEC. In fact, Roy Arans, who works at Nominet, was one of the ones who co-authored the RFC. So we had some good expertise in the company. So the zone was signed in March 2010, the second level domains in May 2011, and that's when all the registry systems accepted the DS records too, so we were ready to go. In terms of the outreach, we were quite proactive. We did marketing campaigns, went to speak to individual registrars and ISPs to talk to them about the benefits of DNSSEC. We even developed a free signing service for registrars so they didn't have to do anything. We'd do it all for them. And we got UK government support, possibly by sort of name only. Yeah, that's a great idea. Go for it. We support you. And unfortunately, over the last couple of years, the uptake has been very poor. We're quite disappointed. So next slide, please. So an update. Over the last few months, we've been in consultation regarding a new product we call Direct UK. And this is regarding opening up the second-level domain registrations. Most of our registrations are done in .co.uk with over 10 million domains. But over the years, we've been asked many, many times whether we would open up the second-level space. So we saw this as an opportunity to create a secure, a sort of premium security product. And inside the consultation, there are details of how, or questions asked about how people would feel about whether there was malware scanning of websites for the domains, including potentially trust marks that would go on the website. Increased validation and even identity verification. And this was really targeted, this product, at UK businesses. So the prospect of having a UK business address was in there. And then finally, having mandatory DNSSEC for all domains in that space. So this is clearly not a transitory product, we were saying. We would continue to support the .co.uk. So the consultation went out last year, August to January 2013. The feedback is very extensive. We had a lot of feedback, and it's extremely varied. You can have a look at the huge report. It's like about 100 pages long, I think, on our website, or you can chat to me over lunch or something if you're interested. But this talk isn't about Direct UK. This is about DNSSEC. So I can kind of sum up the feedback regarding security as kind of, well, yeah, it's generally a good thing, but we don't like you bundling it with opening up the second level domain. And then going down into the specifics of the security features, malware scanning was like, yeah, it's a good idea, but it should be optional. The trust mark was fairly universally disliked, kind of understandable. The increased validation, yeah, that looks good. The UK Nessus was sort of a bit hit and miss. And DNSSEC was really positive. It was seen as a good thing. So when you when you sort of assess those results, you could make the conclusion that, okay, well, maybe we should open it up with just having validation and mandatory DNSSEC. That's a good thing, right? Next slide. However, inside Nominet, and this is very, very recent, we're debating whether we should go any further with this proposal. And the spotlight is absolutely now on DNSSEC, now that we've kind of said, yeah, the malware scanning and Trustmark wasn't very popular. So we did a risk assessment of making DNSSEC mandatory. And these are some of the points that kind of came out of this. So the second one, the first one, it's technical. Did everybody really understand it, appreciate what it does, or do they even care? Or was it just kind of a, you know, hey, it's security, it sounds good, yeah, we're all for that. And that's why it got such a positive feedback in the response. The second point is that it doesn't solve all security issues. So could it be that people go, oh, yeah, well, now we're using DNSSEC, that covers everything, and so we don't need to do anything else? Well, that's not a great idea. The third thing is, I'm sure everybody knows, it's not visible to consumers, so there's no perceived benefits, so very difficult for the registrars to sell. And like I say, we've spoken to ISPs, and you know, they say good things, but then they talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. And then finally, I mean, this is a green presentation, so I'm not going to go into those, thank goodness. But yeah, Roy did a sort of technical risk assessment of some of the issues that may come up based on some previous incidents. And so this is just a list of some of the technical issues that may occur. Now, these are really, really rare and unlikely, but they could still happen. And the point is that if we're making it mandatory and the Direct UK really takes off, so it does become like a transitory product, so we could be talking like multiple millions of domains taking it on, then suddenly we will be blamed for absolutely every technical issue going. So I suppose to conclude, the debate continues, but it's not kind of like whether we support DNSSEC or not. It's whether, you know, it's sort of the technical risk versus the reputation, and it's a difficult balance. And that's it. Any questions?
Do you foresee a time when the debate settles down because there's enough positive experience that it's no longer a question about what risk they're taking and only a question whether they do it or don't?
I'd like to see that, but I think at the moment DNSSEC isn't that well known outside of the environment, so by mandating it, we will be early in pushing it.
Hi, Kath, Jay Daly from .nz. I believe the Czechs, and Andre Filip is over there, have good stats on those different errors and how often those different errors actually occur in the real world. I've seen a presentation from him before about that, and it surprised me because some of them were less rare than I'd expected them to be. And it's a very useful thing for all of us to be have access to build into our planning.
Yeah, thanks. That would be really useful if we could put a number on the expectation of errors. Yeah, thanks.
This is Jacob Schlitter-Kerry. One observation is that I think a kind of a mistake we did when we started the host DNSSEC effort many years ago was we're trying to sell this as a service that someone should actually see a direct value in instead of just a normal technology upgrade that should have happened just in the background, giving all these features anyway, but not trying to upsell it.
That's a good point.
Hi, Kath. Joe Appley here from ICANN. So the implication here seems to be that people's failures in signing DNSSEC zones, not zones managed by Nominet, but other zones within under.uk, would reflect poorly on Nominet. So does that imply that any other DNS error, regardless of DNSSEC, you get blamed for routinely? If somebody forgets to renew their domain name, does that feel like a negative impact on Nominet as far as reputation goes? Because it seems like they're the same. It seems surprising that a failure to sign properly would be really any different in terms of perception than a failure to renew a domain.
I think because the feedback has been so controversial, some of those that have been quite negative about the consultation will look at anything and blame Nominet. So I think it would be a sort of... That's why it's slightly different, because it's so sensitive.
So it's more like the expectation will be that there'll be more failures, and therefore it'll be poor decision making to make DNSSEC mandatory that will cause those greater number of failures.
No,
so
no. No, I'm not saying that there will be more failures. It's just that because it's likely to have such a big uptake and we are making it mandatory, that there will be a spotlight on those, and even if it's not our fault. There will be a proportion of people looking to wait for us to slip up, basically, or wait for any kind of slip up and then point the finger. Thank you.
Thank you, Kath. Debbie, now shift from UK to NZ, halfway around the world.
Right, to the bottom side, we think we lead the world anyway, but we always think that. Hi, Debbie Monaghan, the Domain Name Commissioner for .nz. And the way our country code is structured is that we have two organisations looking after and running the New Zealand country code effectively. The Domain Name Commission, which I head, which does the policy and is essentially the regulator for .nz, and then the registry company, which Jay Daly is the chief executive of, who run the registry, basically, the DNS. And Jay will be talking about the .nz implementation in the next session, so any technical questions can wait for him. Now, in .nz, we're a very pro-registrant policy framework and a competitive registrar market. And so when DNSSEC came along, one of the issues we actually identified were that there were some policy matters and issues related to DNSSEC implementation. So the Domain Name Commission worked closely with the Registry on a policy framework because one of the key issues we wanted to deal with was how registrants could effectively transfer a signed .nz domain name without having to unsign or basically cause other grief in the process or be stuck with one particular registrar. So we went out with consultation with a process which actually, to summarise it, if the DNS operator, you want to change DNS operators and the DNS operators are registrars, they are bound by a policy now to cooperate. And the gaining and losing registrar and DNS operators provide the DS records and other such things so that there can be no interruption of the signed name as it transfers from one DNS operator to another. Of course, we can't bind non-registrar DNS operators, but what we are doing is we're saying we're keeping a database of all signed .nz names and a record of who the hoster is, so that we can then facilitate communication so that the cooperation can then exist between those parties even if they're not registrars. We've also followed that up to make the registrar, a gaining registrar, check if a name is signed on transfer, so that if they can't handle the DS records, they actually notify the registrant what the impact of completing that transfer will be on the domain name. So that's our policy framework to try and, if you like, keep the competitive and pro-registrant basis around. It hasn't been tested yet. Our volume and take-up is still very small. And I think we're in that chicken and egg situation. The registrant's not really understanding the benefits. The registrar's not seeing that there's a market actually there. So what some of the mechanisms that we've adopted to try and encourage it is that we've come up with some what we call a DNSSEC-friendly status for registrars and a handles DS record status for registrars. And we've got criteria that we've defined, and registrars can come to us and show that they can meet those standards. And then on our table of registrars, we actually mark that the registrar has that status. And we have said to all registrars that if we get any queries about DNSSEC, we will, in the first instance, direct those queries to registrars who carry the DNSSEC-friendly status. So we're trying to give them some motivation that that's where we'll steer people. We're also, in conjunction with the registry, working on a whole series of documents and training guides that are not only just targeting registrars, but essentially anyone who's hosting domain names and setting up name servers for hosting, because the issue is actually much broader than just the registrars. The other thing we're working with is the government at the moment is going through a process of reselecting their registrar for .govt.nz, and we've done some work with them, and one of the things that one of the criteria they'll be putting in their RFP is that the registrar that picks up .govt.nz will have to provide DNSSEC service. So we're hoping that that again will, if you like, filter its way down through the .nz domain name space and give registrars, if you like, a reason to actually want to connect and offer DNSSEC services. But I think what we are in is a battle of trying to, how do we market it and prove the benefits? And so we're actively trying to pick and encourage a few case studies so that we can then turn around and actually show what the benefits are by actually having someone who's actually doing that. But it's just a case of kind of working on through the process. Thanks.
Questions?
Thomas Vuren, SIDN. First of all, I applaud your change of your policy in making it mandatory for registrars to cooperate in transfers of DNSSEC. But I wonder, apart from the policy change, have you done anything to facilitate registrars in cooperating? I mean, how many registrars do you actually have?
We have 82 .nz registrars from mostly New Zealand but also around the world. We have at the moment 5 who have got DNSSEC-friendly status.
Okay, so so the communication between the registrars for transfers, are they supposed to do that bilaterally, or have you done anything to facilitate that?
No, at the moment, that we've started off with bilateral. You've just got to communicate. One of the things is, and we were quite honest with registrars, is that nobody else actually had a policy framework for transferring signed names. So what we've done is the starting point. We believe that at the beginning the volumes will be low and it'll be able to be manually handled. But we did have discussions with the registry as well, and it may be that when this takes off and the volumes are high, we have to sort through an automated solution. But for now, it's totally manual and bilateral.
Okay, thank you.
Russ Mundy, Sparta. I guess we're Parsons now. Anyway, 8 years ago, before Jay Daly ever went to New Zealand, he stood up and said one of the things that I had pushed for a while and was pushed back on real hard, and that is the charge that a registrar, or if you're a direct registry dealing with customers, for a DNSSEC name should be less than if you are not doing DNSSEC. In other words, lower price. Is that something that you have examined and Jay has pushed for since he went over there?
Our policy framework is one wholesale rate per domain name, regardless of the second level and regardless of who the registrant or the registrar is. Now, one of the things we're saying is, should we be reviewing that policy? But that's just in general, as we generally review the policies. But in respect of this, I'm a great believer in educating the registrant, and that the registrant should benefit from any change that we impact on. And so encouraging registrars, maybe through a lower fee, how can you make sure that that actually improves the lot of the registrant at the end rather than just the lot of the registrar? So I'm sure as we go through, it'll be one of the topics for discussion. And we have looked at some of the models internationally that, you know, some people, some registries in this room have actually done. And, of course, the fee change does actually come into some of those. So it's something we'll consider, but at this stage, we're sticking with our one price for all .nz names.
Anyone else?
Thank you. Very nice. Dr. Trumpy.
The slides.
Oh, sorry.
I introduce a little bit myself as a
just 1 second.
We make the change of computer. I make some introduction about I represent the governmental in the governmental advisory committee Italy, and I follow the GAC since initial times of ICANN. I can testimony that having been the contact member in the SAC since the beginning, and since 2010 also member of the SAC, the GAC, the governments always followed the activity of Security and Stability Committee, and so we had a lot of relations with the with the SAC in public meetings. And of course, also a number of presentations concerning DNSSEC, concerning IPv4, and things like that regarding the security. In my presentation, I will give some thought about the situation in Italy. And contrary to the presentation, go to the next, please. Okay, to the presentation of the previous speakers. My presentation is titled as the others, with a difference, that is not policy framework for dot Italy, but policy framework for Italy without dot. I'm not speaking for the registry, okay, in any case, but I will mention my registry, and I will make some considerations concerning the multi-stakeholder model of ICANN and how the DNSSEC is perceived by the government from one side, by the registry and the, let's say, private sector in general, and by the users of the network. And we are not, if you have looked at the previous presentations, Italy is still yellow. This means that our registry is planning to become operational early next year. So if we go then, concerning the I put here looking at the three major categories of multi-stakeholderism, that is government, private sector, and then users. Of course, I cannot express myself as the colleague from UK said, that for in some part they are disappointed of lack of support of the government, because if I say that, this means that I'm not able to do my work, and I'm not a government employee, but I'm serving the GAC for Italy now since 14 years, so since the beginning of ICANN. And I have to say that, of course, I made as much as possible a sensitization to the ministries involved about the problems of security in Italy. But regarding the DNSSEC, as it is written here, the people to which I made this sensitization say that they see the DNSSEC as a technology that will improve security, but is connected to the market, and that there is the need of demonstrating that there is a preparation of the private sector from one side and of the committee of the community of users that justify to start by the government what I called here to convincing incentives, and the word convincing is really important. But I can say that in recent times I found some movement and some growing interest, not only in this the group involved in the protection of critical infrastructure in the country, but also by the police, by those that are involved with law enforcement agencies and so on, and not only for DNSSEC but also for other problems connected to security. And so I think that it will be the time is becoming ready for some more concrete action. And also some part of the community start saying, because I made an investigation before preparing this presentation, and some part of the community says, yes, it could be a good idea if the government could contribute with some decree in order to make mandatory, let's say, certain security provisions. Okay. Then, concerning the activity of our country code, in recent months they started one activity in order to prepare the adoption of DNSSEC and the signature of the zone by the end of this year, but probably first quarter of next year. Working together with a number of registrars that are more sensible to these problems. And this working group is ongoing, and we expect, as I say, that the route could be signed in the first quarter next year. And this is, of course, a mandatory step in order to also extend then the adoption of DNSSEC. In the year 2010, we made a promoting workshop quite successful in Rome, where we also verified that there are big users, like, for example, Poste Italiane, like other big companies that are really waiting to adopt DNSSEC as soon as the CCTLD will start. And of course, also they are also involved in activity with some other GTLD. And then my question before was, if a country code do not adopt a DNSSEC, there is an incentive for others to use .com or other registries that already adopted this. And a final consideration that is connected to the previous I gave is about the big users and the banks and so on. The sensitivity on the aspect of security is increasing. But then, before concluding, I would like to go back to some of these general considerations that are just my conviction about the problem of security in general. You see, here, assuring security in the net is like building a wall of bricks. And adopting DNSSEC is like adding one brick. And this is, easy to understand. We need culture to convince about the necessity of this security wall, because what the users and the companies have to verify and to say is the necessity of this wall of security made of bricks. And so it is not sufficient to promote DNSSEC if we are not able to explain how this brick of DNSSEC integrates with the others. or any action concerning promotion of DNSSEC has to be seen as an action that is connected to the investment in security. And we have to explain what the users gain and in a very understandable way, which are the added burden just to sign a name or things like that, and what you really gain. And this is something that is not only regarding DNSSEC, it's regarding any other aspect of security. For example, I was mentioning the law enforcement agency, the police. When we explain to them IPv6, and they were enthusiastic by saying, okay, so we have to get rid of all IPv4, we have to get rid of the NATs, and then we solved our problems. And so then you have to explain that before getting rid of all IPv4, it will take a long time and things like that. But in any case, they would like that the government do something in order to speed up this transition. And this just to make an example. Thank you.
Thank you, Stefano. Questions? Comments? Good. Well, thank you. This brings this session to an end, and we'll turn things over to Xiaodong Li for the next session. This is a color change, which means it's now moved up to intermediate level. And so I will regretfully have to take my leave now and catch up with the proceedings later.
And please join me in thanking Steve for both these wonderful panels. Thank you very much, Steve. And the next set of panelists is can come up. So, of course, we have Xiaodong Li as the moderator. We have Haikuo Zhang, Manabu Sonoda, Yoshio Yoneya, and Jay Daly.
Okay, right. So I just asked Julie to show the map of the Asia Pacific. So you can check how many countries have operated the DNSSEC. Yeah. You know, in Monday morning, it's too louder. So China announced they plan to deploy the DNSSEC in Daoxing, in the CCT area of China. So now the color of China is turned to be orange. So, yeah. Thank you. Anthony, maybe somebody may submit the key to the service. So maybe I can have another ceremony. So I think it's a big progress. But today is not for China. It's for the Asia Pacific. So for this session, we have panelists from different countries. So I suggest maybe every panelist can introduce themselves. And then we can start one by one, right?
Hello, everybody. I'm Haiko Zhang from CNIC.
Hi, this is Yoshio from GPRS.
Good morning. My name is Madame Sonoda. I'm from CNIC.
Good morning. My name is Jay Daly from the New Zealand Registry.
Good. Yeah. So our panelists covered it from south to north. Yeah, it's you know, the Asia Pacific is a big region. So as I mentioned, there is a progress for China to deploy the DNSSEC. So we have a panelist from CNIC, is Haiko Zhang. So you have some presentation, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Does it sound? Okay. Thank you very much.
You want to stand up or just sit down? You can see the screen. Okay, good.
Okay. Cool. Good morning, everybody. And I'm Haiko Zhang from CNIC. And the topic of this section is influence for DNSSEC. As you know, DNSSEC is a really effective method to build a secure platform in DNS system. But like everything has two sides, the DNSSEC has introduced another problem which may affect the DNS. Let's talk about these issues in detail. First of all, I want to say something about the influence of network infrastructure. As you know, China is so vast that there are about millions of network gears running in the mainland of China to provide internet service. Some network gears are relatively new, but others may be out of date. The old network gears may influence the reachability for bigger DNSSEC package. CNIC spent a lot of time and resource in analyzing the network infrastructure. We checked about 130,000 network gears. We found that some old firewall couldn't support EDNS0 protocol, and some old routers may have MTU problem. This is bad news for the DNSSEC deployment in China. But the good news is that we have advised the ISPs to upgrade the network infrastructure and phase out the network equipment or reconfig some network gears in the right way. As you know, China is so different from other countries because we have huge population. At the end of 2012, China has about 600 million netizens. It's amazing. So the performance is another hot issue we focused on. The DNS performance will be reduced sharply if all queries need DNSSEC replies. Next slide, please. Okay, let's talk about the influence to DNS software. From the hacker's point of view, it will be very hard to forward DNS package in name server because every result record in name server or internet will be verified at the resolver side. But the DNSSEC package will be bigger about 4 times larger than regular DNS package. So hacker may use these features to make attack to our DNS service, like DDoS attack and amplification attack. You know, DNS software is very vulnerable to DDoS attack. So we must use another solutions to handle this issue. Next slide, please. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about the influence to the end user. If the resolver cache are poisoned by man-in-the-middle attack, what happened to the end user? Maybe the web page, the related web page, will be invisible. Yeah. But the netizens may totally don't understand the DNSSEC. They will argue the network infrastructure or DNSSEC protocol. How can I do? Scenic are developing some video tools which can tell the end user what happened in DNS service and why the web page is invisible. I think the tools will make DNSSEC easier to understand for our netizens in mainland of China. Next slide. Okay, that's all.
Questions? I have a question. Dan York, you mentioned on that previous slide the system for the visual tools for end users. Mm-hmm. What are you doing in that space? Or what do they look like? Or
We will deploy a tools which deployed in at the client in your computer. If the web page is invisible, our tools will tell the end user the detail about about the failures, like. If the DNSSEC verification field, you will say, "Sorry, the result record are poisoned. Please use another resolver to help you resolve the web page."
So I guess my question is that something that will be installed on the client machine?
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Sort of an add-on to the browser or something like that.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Other questions?
Thanks. Russ Mundy, Sparta. I keep doing that. Parsons now. Company name change. What type of things specifically are you monitoring for with respect to DNSSEC?
Okay. Good question. And for our tools, we will have input format, input method. If the users want to check something from his computer, like a laptop, he will put the result code, and we will query the relative the resolver and get the information.
Could you speak a little closer to the
okay. Get the result. So. Basically, we will verify the a resource, a record, and in the future, we will verify the TLC record. This is very new. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, all right, why don't we, okay, maybe one more, and then we'll, go to the next presentation.
Jacques from Syrah. So, in terms of signing technology, are you Did you build the technology to sign your own zone right now, or you're still working on that?
We will run the same zone in the future, in the near future. But now we are only deploying my software in Palette system, not online.
So may I give you answer to your question? So Synec developed their own software and a system for the DNSSEC. Yeah. So that's ready. That's ready. So maybe because I have another presentation, so maybe you have more questions for him just after his presentation. Yeah, just go ahead.
I have three presentations today over there, and it's a long day for me. Okay, let's continue. The next topic of section is scenic DNSSEC deployment in the region. Next slide, please. As you know, the DNSSEC deployment is a project which need to carry out step by step. This is our procedure for DNSSEC deployment for SYN domain. The top of to-do list for SYNIC is investigation. Then we made a plan and reviewed it, and we developed some software to support the SYN DNSSEC deployment. If all the results are ready, we will we deployed the software to our pilot running environment. After long term running in pilot environment, and everything are on the right track, we will send the SYN zone online. At the end of the procedure, we will upgrade our registry system, which can receive the DS record from our registrar automatically. Next slide, please. Okay, let's talk about the technical preparation. First of all, we developed a signing system which can provide signing service and the DNS key over service. This software has another killer feature like disaster recovery and so on. Then we developed a new version registry system which can receive the DNS record from the subdomain of SYN and by the EPP protocol. At the same time, we developed a new monitor system which covered most area in mainland of China. This monitor system can help us to observe the process of the DNSSEC deployment for SYN domain. Next slide, please. Okay, this is our monitor system. We call it National Domain Monitor System. This system covered. This is a distributed system. The distributed the monitor unit has covered in most area in mainland of China. If any important domain are invisible because of DNSSEC verification failures, this system will give us a notify. Then our operators will trace the DNS the DNS package and fix it as soon as possible. Next slide, please. Our monitor system can monitor some important name servers. White House is very important in the world. We found that the White House has deployed DNSSEC, and every resource record can be verified at Beijing City. I think it's good news for the United States of America. Next slide, please. Our monitor system can monitor the resolvers. Google's public DNS is very popular, and a lot of netizens use this resolvers, we found 1 month ago, our monitor found that the Google Public DNS has provided DNSSEC verification service in Beijing, but in Harbin, which is capital of Heilongjiang province, the situation is totally different. Okay, next slide, please. Scenic has a SOS system, which can monitor all name servers which running for same domain. We must make sure every service is on the right track when we deploy the DNSSEC. If any service throw exception, we will get the information and handle it immediately. Next slide, please. As you know, the DNSSEC is very vulnerable to the DDoS attack, so Scenic has developed a hardware by ourselves, which is DNS anti-attack device, which can monitor the traffic of DNS service, and it can differentiate the invalid traffic from the valid traffic, and then block the DDoS attack and or amplification attack. After tuning, this device has very high performance. Next slide, please. Okay, that's all.
Helps if I turn the mic on. Questions? Any questions about the time frame that they showed up here? Oh, there we go.
So I have one question. Are you preparing to publish DPS, that is a DNSSEC practice statement?
Yes, I will publish it.
Already published?
No.
No.
Because we haven't deployed it online.
Okay, thank you.
Do you have a question you want to talk about?
So the Jacques from Syrah. So the anti-attack device, those are in line inside China's network, I guess.
Sorry.
They're inside the network, like a intrusion prevention box.
Maybe I could give you a response, but not on behalf of the moderator, on behalf of Scenic, because I will transfer business work from Scenic. I have a question for you. That device is just like the anti-DDoS. Yeah, intrusion protection devices, but they focus on the DNS traffic. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of anti-DDoS devices focus on different kind of traffic. Yeah, and I also have to give a quick comment about the monitoring. Kaiko used the terminology for monitoring, but you know, for the monitoring system, it's just some query response. You do some statistics. It doesn't mean that it's a different kind of monitoring. Yeah.
Dan York, I'll ask the question around, it was great to see the time frame that you had there. So if I recall it correctly, you're saying that you'll have it signed or operational by the end of 2014? Is that what I...
You mean for DNSSEC?
Yeah.
Yeah, I assume to have it in this year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but, you know, is there some operational testing is starting in 2009 or 2010?
Okay.
So they have a plan because they get approval from the Chinese government because it's DNSSEC. So it's about the security. So the minister announced the plan to deploy the DNSSEC step by step. We assume that we submit key and change the color from orange to green this
that's
year.
That's right. Well, that's excellent. So then by the time we're doing this in a couple of cycles here, we'll have that as fully green and fully operational.
Yeah.
That's great. Excellent news for CN. Any other questions?
I hope it's not a very aggressive target.
Ah, you know, hey, at least there's a target, and we can get a big spot there. Any other questions? Going once, twice, okay.
Yeah. So we transfer the microphone to from Japan, the SP.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Manabu Sonoda. I'm from Panasonic Group ISP Sanit that provides service in Japan. We are first ISP in Japan that provides GNSS service for customers. Today, I have two topics. First, Sanit's approaches to GNSS. Second, we experience failure. Next slide, please. First topic, we began GNSS deployment in April 2010. We researched GNSS technology and GNSS software. June 2010, we start GNSS validation at Mainful Resolver. Next plan was signing our hosting service zone. Between September to December, I deployed key and sign management system. Next slide, please. January 2011, we started signing all DNS hosting service zone. Next slide, please. Many people ask us why you deploy GNSS. Before doing, the purpose is protect customers for phishing sites. But now, in addition to validity of DKIM and SPF, of course, we expecting them. Second topic, we experience failure. First failure topics is failure topics is key and sign management. December 2012, we detected sign failure in some zone, but the reason was unclear at the moment. So customer's domain was really bogus. Next slide. So we decided that DNS service was priority over DNSSEC service. So we removed DS resource records. We have 2 days by the expire signature. Usually DSTTL is 1 day. So so many hosting domains avoided bogus. So we know signature lifecycle design is very important. So later we found the reason the key status unusual because manual operation. The system was not fault. We resisted this again. Next slide, please. This one. That's first failure. Second failure topic is validation. We have counter plan when big impact zone work failure. We watch it root, com, net, org, and JP zone. Our full resolver server stop validation automatically when failure of it detect. Next slide. December 2012, many Japanese ISP allocated reserved zone was bogus. We don't expect reserved zone failure. Our full resolver CPU utilization became 3 times higher than usual, and 10% incoming query answer was server fail, and non-recursive queries became 8 times higher than usual. This time we have enough resource, CPU, memory, network bandwidth, so not decide disable validation. But many using PTR record service were given a bad effect. That's all, thank you.
Any questions?
Joe Abley, ICANN.
So your slide said that you automatically disable validation when you see errors under these particular TLDs. So how do you tell whether this is an operational error by the zone administrator and not an attacker trying to attack your validator with bogus answers? if this is going to be complicated to explain, we can easily talk at lunch. We don't have to talk now.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay.
Hi, this is Yoshiro from JPRS. Today, I'd like to introduce community activities in Japan regarding to DNSSEC. Next slide. So we mean the Japanese did some community activities. The first one is DNSSEC Japan, or in shortly DNSSEC.jp. The community DNSSEC JP activity was finished. The duration of activity was started on November 2009 and dissolved in March 2012. But this is not the finish of the activity, but all outcomes and the activity are inherited to DNS operators group in Japan. I will explain later. The DNSSEC Japan was a forum for domain name registries, registrars, and the relevant parties such as DNS and network operators, and with the aim of introducing deploy in DNSSEC. And the main objective of DNSSEC JP was to provide and share DNSSEC information in Japanese. So, as a result of DNSSEC JP's activity, next slide please, DNSSEC JP published many documents. So this is a summary of the published documents. First one is DNSSEC RFC's expositions written in Japanese. To understand DNSSEC deeply, we had a study group inside DNSSEC Japan and create a memo for the understanding and publish it to the public. And DNSSEC-JP published technical reports regarding to DNSSEC, such as DNSSEC tutorials and how to import root TA to the resolver securely. We did some tests and examination of the registrar transfer and made a guideline to the public and so on. And we also provide some operational reports, such as notes for Red Hat Enterprise Linux 5 or ARIA. Those Linux uses old bind, so that is not good for the DNSSEC. So announced to update bind or proper DNS software. And for example, we also provide how to use HSM for DNSSEC and so on. Next, please. And other outcomes from DNSSEC JP was DNSSEC ready logo. DNSSEC Japan created a logo for the DNSSEC readiness, and the end users or DNSSEC aware providers or registrars can use this logo if they meet the criteria which DNSSEC Japan provides. DNSSEC Japan provides a checklist if how they correspond to DNSSEC. And DNSSEC Japan does not provide any approval for it, but this is just a self-check principle. And DNSSEC Japan held several forums regarding to DNSSEC. This is mostly yearly event and one-day event for the public. So DNSSEC Japan held three forums in 2010, 11, and 12. Many people came from the ISPs and registrars or SIRs and e-commerce organizations. Okay, so the next activity is a DNS operators group Japan, in shortly DNSOps.jp. This DNSOps is an active community. It was formed on July 2006, and more than 1,600 individual members are subscribing mailing list. And DNSOps regularly held both, mostly twice a year. And during the both, many people talk about the topics related to DNS. And DNSOps JP will hold DNSSEC Forum as a successor of DNSSEC Japan, and this spring. It is late of this May. Okay, so next, please. Excuse me. Okay, so and the third activity is a Japan Network Operators Group known as JANOG. JANOG was formed on July 1997, and more than 6,200 people are subscribing the mailing list. And JANOG held meetings regularly twice a year, and about 600 or 700 people join the meeting. And they talk various topics related to network operations, including DNS and DNSSEC, and sometimes DNSSEC is a topic during the JANOG. So we have a large amount of outreach. Next, please. And the last one is Internet Week. This is one of the largest internet forums in Japan, held by JPNIC. And DNS Day is one of the regular programs. And in the DNS Day, information sharing and panel discussion related to DNS is a topic. And recently, these 2 or 3 years, DNSSEC is a very hot topic. And in parallel with DNS Day, Internet Week, we have the DNSSEC tutorial. There is a very high demand from Internet Week participants to learn how DNSSEC works. So this is a semi-regular program in the Internet Week. Next, please. Summary, we do continuous community activities since 2009, and we share the information with Japanese because the localized activity for people who are not familiar with English. Many of Japanese are not familiar with English, so that the localization activity is very important to educate or discuss about DNSSEC. So due to the activity, these activities, awareness of DNSSEC is increasing now, but unfortunately, the penetration is still low. Thank you.
Very, very good community activities.
Yeah. Questions?
It's Dan York. I'll just agree. Those are great community activities. That's wonderful. Yeah. To see a lot of activity happening with DNSSEC.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, may I give a question for Nia-san and Manabu-san? So, could you tell us about the DNS queries or DNS traffic in Japan?
As a registry, we see very few DNS queries to the JP DNS servers. About the 2% or 3% of queries are DS. But because the registered DS records in JP zone is very few, so we see very few queries regarding to DNS.
You mean very few means it means 10 or 100 or 1,000?
About a few hundreds per second.
sound.
Okay. Okay, next slide, please. DNSSEC in .nz is fully implemented. We conducted a stage rollout from May to September of 2012. In .nz, domain names are registered at the third level. So we have a number of second levels, .co.nz, .gov.nz, and others. We began with .geek.nz, which is the best second level in the world, by the way, everybody agrees. And it has a small number of registrations from people who understand there is a risk of registering that. And then we moved through the other second levels, through to .co.nz, the large one. And then we also have a number of second levels which are moderated, which means that if you wish to register within them, there is an authority responsible for allowing you to do that. And we then implemented DNSSEC within those through to gov.nz. We have now had our second set of key signing ceremonies, and we now have the grand total of approximately 30 sign zones out of 520,000 domain names. So we are doing as well as many others, it seems. Next slide, please. Now, I'm going to talk about the DNSSEC practice statement mainly, but this is the main checklist for we've seen the simplified checklist for implementing DNSSEC. You begin with your DNSSEC practice statement, which is your set of policies that you publish that explains to people how you will do things, and you consult on that. You build your signing infrastructure, which for us uses HSMs. You build your software changes, you develop your rollout plan, and you then deal with everything that goes wrong for the next year, which for us was increased zone transfer time and our infrastructure being used for amplification attacks. So, next slide, please. So, the DNSSEC practice statement. We came to an agreement with our regulator, with Debbie, that we would aim for community acceptance of our DNSSEC practice statement. So we would publish it, we would consult within the technical community, within the network operators group, and we would consult within the information security groups as well, to ask people if they were happy with it. By doing that, it verifies that we are meeting the needs of our users, and it gives the technical scrutiny from outside of the registry that is important for these things. And we started this in June 2011, almost a year before we went live, and we assumed it would be of not much interest to many people, perhaps a bit obscure, but there were lots of problems with this. It took some time to resolve. Next slide, please. So the first problem, a number of people felt that the key signing key size that we chose was too small. We chose 1152 bits based on our analysis of the strength of security compared to the speed of signature and other things. It's a size, I think, chosen by the Brazilians and by the Czechs as well, and a number of others. But a number in our community wanted us to use 2048 bit size. And the reasons given were that everybody else does it, or that we should have the strongest possible, or that we would be, why would we risk smaller than 1152 if our, than 2048 if our infrastructure could support 2048? We were clever. We brought in a world famous cryptographer to be involved who defended 1152 and explained the many, many years it would take to break this, and the fall of civilizations that would take place in that time, you know, and the heat death of the universe and things. But that was not enough for some. And so we changed to 2048, because that's the essence of consulting with the community, is that we need to meet the needs of the community, even if they are slightly unusual. Next slide, please. Thank you. Right. The next problem then was with how much we must audit our staff. We were planning criminal checks, but they wanted us to go further, have financial checks and drug checks as well of people. Now,
this is an interesting comment because what the people were saying to us was, we trust you as individuals. You are lovely people, you know, very nice. You can come round and meet our family. But what if you leave and the next people are not so nice? We compromised some way on this and agreed to financial checks for new staff so that we can make that as part of the vetting program for new staff, and we have done that now and used that. We're not going as far as the drug checks, though, but the financial checks we are working. Next slide, please. The next problem was that many people had seen the ICANN route signing process and felt that we needed trusted community representatives. And the reason given that they provided independent audit. Our response was that this would give us many more people to put through the security vetting, that it would slow us down if we needed to do things in emergencies, that we already had independent auditors as part of the plan, and that the ICANN method is security theatre for good ICANN reasons. But we almost... New Zealand is a small country with a small number of people. We don't need security theatre if everybody knows each other. So we did not include the trusted community representatives, and there are still some who think that we should have trusted community representatives as well. Sorry? Yeah, that's right, yeah. And then the final one was people felt that we needed to publish full details of our site security, where our sites were, how you access them, every detail about them. And our concern was that while transparency is important for security, if you give too much information, it makes you a target. So what we agreed was that we would create a specification for site security and include in that a protocol for site access, who could access and when, and we would then have that independently audited. We did that as well. So next slide, please. So this was how, after several months, we came to a DNSSEC practice statement that had acceptance from the technical community. And for us, community engagement on a DNSSEC practice statement is vital. Some views will be irrational, but they must generally be accommodated because this is the community view. That the point about being a CCTLD registry is that you serve your CC, and so we need to do what they want, even if we know better than them. And there were lots of very useful feedback. So there were lots of other things I haven't mentioned that were very good ideas that we fixed, we implemented immediately, document versioning, publication of information. So this was a very useful process overall. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. Any questions? So if you have questions for Jay and also for other panelists, it's okay.
Oh, come on, you're not going to let Jay just stand up there alone. You've got to ask him a question here, right? Okay. Somebody's got to. Okay, we've got one. Oh.
Hi, Jay. Julie Hammer from ALDA. Can you give us a little bit more detail about the process that you used and the community elements that you reached into during that consultation process?
Sure. Please. So we wrote the DNSSEC practice statement and had that detailed and ready with a simple guide to it as well. And we went to three places. We went to the Network Operators Group, which is a mailing list, and... relatively easy to get to. We went to the Information Security Specialist Group, more of the hackers and security companies than the corporate people, but still a good one there. And we then went to the Society of Computer Professionals as well and published something in one of their journals that went through to the computer professionals. So we effectively targeted the market from those that wear suits, those that wear jeans, and those that we're really not sure what they're wearing because they're hidden in the computer room somewhere. Okay.
Joe?
Yeah. Okay.
Lyndall MacDonald, Icon Fellow. Could you just speak to the cost of the implementation and how that factored into the scheme of things?
I'd have to look that up to tell you the cost. The DNSSEC practice statement was a the consultation on this was a relatively minor part of the cost, and the length of time that it takes to implement DNSSEC correctly and thoroughly meant that while we spent a long time doing that, it did not slow us down because the work was still going on in developing the software and building the infrastructure behind that. I can look up the costs and give you an indication, but I imagine for us they're in the order of about $800,000, possibly a bit less, which is about $700,000.
More questions? No. So I think so. Now it's 10:45. Only 50 minutes for break. So before we close this panel discussion, I prefer every panelist can give a last comment.
I want to see Scenic will try best to deploy the DNSSEC, and this is a good place to share our experience with you, and I think you'd better give me feedback. It's very, very valuable for us. Okay.
Okay. So in Japan, DNSSEC is still at the start point of deployment. So we do like to know much from other countries how they are promoting DNSSEC. So information sharing between you are very important for me.
So, if you prefer to keep silence?
Okay. I think to remind you that community engagement with DNSSEC from the very outset is one of the most important things, and you have two good models presented. You have the large population model of Japan, which is very thorough and reaching across multiple parties in multiple different ways, and you have the small country, get a small group of people into the room and let them tell you you're wrong model that we have as well. And you know, you can stage this in between, but the community engagement is a fundamental way of beginning with DNSSEC.
Okay, thanks for all of the panelists. I think I hope the next time we have panel discussion about a specific again, I hope the color can be much more green dot. So and also I think it's second Jay's comment. You know, for the DNSSEC deployment, it's not a very easy way for us. We need to do a lot and persuade our community to support that. You know, I prefer everyone here can be the evangelist to persuade the people and encourage the people to support that. I hope next time we can invite more ISPs and some restaurant to join the panelists. Yeah, thank you. And also thank you, Dan. Yeah, the microphone person.
So we have a short break. We will start up precisely at 11 o'clock. So please be sure to come back because we have a lot more interesting program for you.